This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
From Neon Hum Media, this is Dirt Cheap. I'm Jeffrey Golden.
And I'm Amanda Meadows.
And we're reading Murder in the Glass Room by Edwin Rolfe and Lester Fuller. So, Amanda, we are approaching chapter 10 of this masterpiece. Mm-hmm. Do you remember what happened in chapter 9?
It was kind of a quick and dirty chapter.
Yes.
So Phil gets home invaded and ransacked by Willie, our favorite character from the past.
Hey, Willie. So he gets robbed.
Right.
He's in his home, but he doesn't have his wallet, which is the thing that Willie was robbing him for.
Right, for his money. And didn't the wallet also have the $50,000?
The wallet had the $50,000. That's what they were going for.
It was the $50,000.
Yeah. So he gets beat up.
Yes.
And the cops are going to come and investigate. And so he checks out, as you'll recall.
Yeah, he flees.
Meanwhile, in case you're just joining us, he's the number one suspect in his wife's murder.
Oh, yeah, that part. Let's see where else Phil can insert himself to further incriminate and put the spotlight on himself.
This is chapter 10. How I got to Rosa's, I'll never completely know. I was so groggy, I didn't know where I was. My guardian angel must have been working overtime, because I did get there. Rosa opened the door, and I fell into the room. I remember telling her that I wanted to sleep, and her saying, "All right, I'll get everything ready." Then I heard a man's irritated voice in the bedroom, and the sound of a bed squeaking. And soon after that, the back door slammed. Rosa came back. "All right, Chico," she said. "Come on." She helped me up, and I leaned on her shoulder as she led me into the bedroom. The bed was freshly made, with the covers turned back. I flopped down and let her wash the dried blood off my face. Then she undressed me and tucked the blankets around my neck. My eyes closed. A cock blocked her.
He's always showing up at the worst possible time for her. And it's like, she's already got to explain why her house is full of yellow roses to her suitors. It's like, no, don't worry. It's just the stupid boy that I take care of sometimes.
It's the boy, the murder suspect boy. Came home bloody. I have to take care of him, so you got to go. And don't tell the police, by the way, please. She leaned over me and brushed my forehead with her lips. "All right now, baby," she whispered. I nodded my head against the pillow. "Rosa?" "Yes, Chico?" "Rosa, you should have been 15 years younger." "Go to sleep," she said. "Or I should have been 15 years older." She kissed me again. "Either way, baby, I'd never have been very good for you." "Never," she said. "I don't know," I said. "I know," she said. "Never." Minor mystery.
That's it was an awkward way to have that minor mystery solved, but
yeah.
I'm glad that she told him to his face that it's never happening.
Never happening. Never will happen.
Yeah, I think like she finds him a pitiful, sweet soul.
Right.
And not like actually attractive to her.
Right.
Which is great. For her, she knows her boundary there. But yeah, Phil just keeps showing up in dire straits to get patched up like a baby boy. And then, like, as you're being tucked in, you're like, you know, mom, if you weren't my mom,
maybe we would fuck.
You'd probably do a good job boning me right now.
I was vaguely aware of her standing there for a long time. I awoke very suddenly. There was no shock, no sharp sound of any kind to startle me out of sleep. Everything was quiet and restful. I had probably been dreaming again, but this time I couldn't remember any part of it. All I knew was that I suddenly sat up in bed and looked at my watch. It was 10:30. I started to feel angry at Rosa for letting me sleep that long, but I remembered that I hadn't told her to wake me. Yeah, also, like, my first instinct was to be angry at Rosa.
It's always outside of him. It's amazing, the projection abilities, even when he's groggy.
Yeah. Groping around the room in the curtained darkness, I found an old bathrobe. It was too small for me, but that didn't matter. I walked out into the living room and heard Rosa's voice outside the door. She was on the porch talking to somebody. Then she laughed and said, "See you tomorrow." She walked in with a batch of letters in her hand. She looked surprised when she saw me sitting there awake.
"Chico, what happened to you last night?"
she asked. I fingered the scab on the bridge of my nose. "I walked into a door," I said.
Cool lie.
Cool lie. I mean, we all know it's a lie, Phil. I mean...
Yeah, why else would you run to her house unless you were in mortal danger? That's like the only time you go to her house.
Right. You barely remember to get her flowers. On her birthday, I think it was?
Yep.
This is something that he doesn't need to lie about.
She knows what's up.
Well, he can say that he got mugged. Like, he can say that he got robbed. It has nothing to do with the case. It has nothing to do with Edna's murder. So,
good point.
It wouldn't be information that she shouldn't know, or like if, you know, she was dragged into a court or whatever, she would have to say. So, yeah, he could just be honest and be like, "Yeah, I got beat up." She didn't seem to expect a more logical answer.
"Come into the kitchen, baby," she said. "I'll make you breakfast."
I followed her into the big, old-fashioned kitchen. Carlos was sitting at the table. He jumped up, scraping his chair along the floor, and threw his arms around me. I grinned at him and happily shouted, "Carlos, the same." He laughed, slapping me on the back. "The one and the only and the same, always the same." "What did you find out?" I asked.
"Sit down, amigo."
"Eat first, Chico," Rosa said, but I was too anxious. "Tell me, Carlos," I insisted. "First, sit down," he said. "Rosa is correct. A man cannot talk well on an empty stomach." "I don't want to talk. I want to listen." "It's the same thing. Food is essential for proper listening." I looked at him, then at Rosa. I watched her as she slipped on an apron and got to work on the stove. And then I looked back at Carlos. "What's all this about?" I asked. "Did you find out or didn't you?" Rosa said, "Have patience, Chico. Let's eat first." I knew there was no use pressing it. When they got like that, neither Rosa nor Carlos could be hurried. I was seething inside, but there was no magic accelerator in the house to speed them up.
They're Spanish. They're on Spanish time, dude.
Yep.
You know these people very well. You know them very well, and you showed up unannounced, and you are on borrowed time and generosity.
Yeah.
And going, "TikTok, motherfucker, time to pay attention to me." And it's like, no, everyone needs to eat.
Everyone needs to eat.
Let everyone have breakfast.
If he communicated a little bit better, maybe, you know, this would be, you know, maybe this would be more understandable on his part. If he was like, "Listen, you know, I know breakfast is important. It's been important ever since we were little. I understand. But I'm in an emergency situation. This information is really important."
He can't use his words like that.
But he can't use his words like that, right? So instead, he's just like, "Tell me information. Tell me because I want to know." And they're like, "No, fucking we're eating. This is eating time." Rosa handed me a large glass of orange juice. Carlos winked at me but kept quiet. I sipped the juice slowly. As sharply as I had awakened a few minutes before, I was getting drowsy again. I had less than 5 hours of sleep in 48 hours. Rosa put a big platter of fried eggs down in front of me and a plate piled with toast.
That sounds really good, by the way.
Oh my God, yeah. I would definitely eat that.
Yeah, come on.
You know, I wouldn't fill this up. And
Don't fill this up.
Don't fill this up for yourself. Get some delicious food. normally I don't think about a book this much.
That's a good point.
It changes the reading experience. Because even in like a book club situation, right, you'll read a chapter and then, you know, maybe you'll form like one or two opinions about that chapter at that you're going to bring to a buffet of opinions.
Exactly.
Right? You're going to bring to a potluck of opinions.
AKA
right?
a book club.
But in this case, we're thinking about this book so much.
It's a part of our lives.
Yeah. I really
It's the third member of our marriage.
I really kind of feel like Phil is coming to life in our brains. Like we start to like talk about Phil. Like we start to reference Phil. Like Phil is becoming like a person, like a figure in our universe.
Phil's poison is like leaking out into reality in these like little drips. Cause like I say racket now all the time.
Right back.
You may have heard of the podcast Juicy Scoop. Wondered what it is? Why aren't you listening? Well, I'm its host, created it, been doing it for 7 years. I'm Heather McDonald of Juicy Scoop with Heather McDonald. Now, I could tell you why you should be listening to my show, but my listeners wanted to write the ad for me, and here are some of the things they said. Not your regular juicy podcast. Catch up on all the juicy topics from Hollywood and pop culture to true crime and beyond. Heather McDonald's Juicy Scoop always has great guests, great laughs, and great gossip. It's a comedian's take on the hottest headlines. Juicy Scoop is the pop culture news you want to hear. No BS, no filter, no filler. Raw, real, and in the moment. Throw in the hilarity of amazing comedians that you'll instantly be obsessed with, a juicy crime story, and a dash of normal life in LA moments, and you've got yourself an amazing week of Juicy Scoop. Two episodes every week, every Tuesday and Thursday. It will never let you down.
And we're back with Rosa and Carlos trying to get Phil to eat some food. Phil is ignoring them. He just wants information. He's on an all-information diet. Eat. You need it. But I pushed the plate away and concentrated on the coffee, black. Now for your information, Rosa said after a while. I put my coffee cup down. It's about time, I said. Carlos will tell you about the flying to Washington and about the other one. He has all of it, all that there is to get. Are you sure? I asked, turning to Carlos. You found out yourself? You didn't send somebody else? Absolutely, Carlos said. Positively and without a doubt, sure. I'm glad you did it yourself, I said. Who else could do it? Carlos asked modestly. But let me tell you, amigo, it was a mission for a... how do you call them? Expert. More yet, for a diplomat. It is not the easiest thing to go into a large airport and ask a simple question. One must be an official, so... so what? I asked, trying to speed him up. So I became an official. Simple, he beamed at me. What kind of official? I asked. That required a little thought, Carlos said. You know how it is with me. I speak English as good as anybody. Better, said Rosa faithfully. Okay, you know how in a musical, there are like songs that are like important to the plot?
Yes.
And then there are those songs that are like... I'm a guy.
I'm a guy who does this thing.
I'm a guy who does this thing.
Let's fill out the second act.
Let's fill out the second act. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is where I feel like Carlos is about to break into song.
It does feel that way. It's like, oh, just listen to me. Mm-hmm.
And who else could do it? Carlos.
It's like one of those scheme songs.
If you need an official, you know what to do. Call Carlos. He'll help you right through. I mean, yeah, he definitely has like this vibe to him. Like,
yeah, he's a vivacious man. I like his energy too.
And he's a bit of a storyteller, as you'll see.
Uh-oh.
Carlos acknowledged the compliment with a delighted smile, then continued. But still, let us not deceive ourselves. I have with me all the time the traces of the accent of the country of my origin. Again, I'd like to apologize to our listeners for not having the traces of the accent of the country of my origin. That would be Spain. As you know, the Spanish accent did not go over well with the folks at Neon Hum. So we're going Spainless. So I asked myself plainly, with the accent of a Spaniard, what kind of an official would be most logical for me to be? The answer came immediately, Spanish. But even that was not good enough. Spain is too far away, and some North Americanos don't know whose side she is on in this war, if any. No, I decided, I have to come closer to home, closer to the United States, closer to Los Angeles. Then I had my most brilliant inspiration. I would become the official of a good neighbor. Now the question remained, which good neighbor? And the answer came fast again, Argentina. He looked about him with an air of triumph, but Rose and I just sat and waited. Now, I want to point something out. You'll recall that Phil was with Shelley. When Phil told Shelley, hey, I need to get some information at the airport, Shelley was like, I will literally make a single phone call.
Yes.
And he was like, don't you dare make a single phone call. Instead, he's put this guy, Carlos, who is just like a guy who's just like really good at doing things, though we don't know what exactly.
He seems like a charmer.
A charmer. Carlos has had to do all of this work for a piece of information that Shelley could have gotten with like one phone call.
For some reason, he wouldn't let her do it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Again, Phil's choices of who he wants to let help him fail him every time.
Yep.
Filling it up.
He's filling it up. Why not? Asked Carlos. A good neighbor, a brand new member of the United Nations. Argentina is a magical name in the United States. Besides, by purest chance, I happen to have in my possession a document proving that I am an accredited correspondent for La Critica of Buenos Aires. Actually, I'm not a correspondent. Actually, all I have written for Critica are a few literary essays. You know, Rosa, on Lope de Vega, on Calderón de la Barca, on Antonio Machado.
He just skipped over all of Central America. I was just like, no, this is too brown.
Right.
I got to pick a country in South America that's mostly white. It's kind of Argentina. It's also where like a bunch of Nazis went. Like,
yeah, that's right. I believe that is correct. That is where the Nazis went after World War II, Argentina. Some of them hid out there. It was a wild place.
Yeah.
And I think Carlos's instincts are right that to fool a bunch of white people, choose the whitest country in Latin America. I started to say something, but Rosa put her hand on my arm and whispered, "Patience, Chico, patience." With this document, I armed myself and drove out to the airport. As I had foreseen, nobody there spoke Spanish or read Spanish. Who in Los Angeles does? We only founded the city. Rosa nodded. So with this document, I represented myself to the ticket-selling manager as an official of the Argentine consulate in Los Angeles. All that he did was look at it. As soon as he saw it was in another language, he believed me utterly. Ought to get his head knocked off, I muttered. What? Asked Carlos. Nothing, I said. I was just thinking. I think Phil's reaction here is interesting. Rather than be like, Carlos, a guy I like, you did a cool thing. He's like, that guy who you tricked is an idiot. Yeah, he always wants to go to the negative.
This is a great scene to remember that Humphrey Bogart was to play Phil Norris's character should this have been a movie. And imagine Humphrey Bogart like man-babying his pile of eggs and being like,
I think they would
you're not helping me. They would have cut that.
They would have changed the entire book.
You're right.
There's so much of it would have changed because this is not Humphrey Bogart. I can't see Bogart getting tucked in into bed by his mommy. It's just like
it just wasn't how the game of that trope was being played.
Right.
It would be like men would be kind of weirded out by seeing that.
Yeah.
Like at least if it had been in a film, like just watching an extended scene of of a man getting tucked in.
You should see this airport, Rosa, Carlos said. Never have I seen anything to compare with it. The airplanes coming down and rising from the ground every minute. Hundreds and hundreds of them, all of them new and shiny and loud as anything. Magnificent. Watching them, I thought to myself, if only we had had in Madrid the number of planes that used the Los Angeles airport in a single week, we would have won in spite of everything. We could have bombed Berlin on Hitler's birthday and Rome on Good Friday. Carlos, Rosa exploded. What? I told you before, don't be blasphemous. It is not blasphemy, Carlos shouted. It is simple justice. Didn't the planes from Rome bomb Valencia and Barcelona and 100 other towns? Didn't they kill 10,000 of our people in one raid in March? My God, woman, what is a man made of? I know, Carlos, Rosa said softly, but that is far away now. That is of no importance to Phil. Tell him what you came to tell him.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah, no, I mean, again, I like Carlos.
Carlos is great.
I feel like if I was reading a book about Carlos, I'd be having a good time.
I agree. I'm getting like most interesting man in the world energy from Carlos. He knows how to finesse a situation. He knows how to get a good scam over on someone. But he also has a good sense of justice in terms of like, you know, war style anyway. Of just like, yeah, Spain went through it.
I waited while Carlos calmed down. Finally, he spoke again in a low voice. That is all. Armed with my questionable document, I saw the man who manages the ticket selling, and it was he who told me the facts. This man, Stanley, did have a reservation on the 3 o'clock airplane that day, and he did call for it, and he did get on the plane and fly away on the afternoon of May 22nd to Washington. That is what the man who takes care of the ticket selling told me. Those are the facts.
Okay, interesting. So he got the information.
So Stanley presumably has an alibi. So he, at least in from what we know here, he couldn't have directly murdered Edna.
Right.
In theory, he could have gotten somebody else to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But he probably wasn't there that night. My face must have shown what the news meant for me because Rosa said, "It's not good that Stanley went." "No, it's not good," I said. She went for another cup of coffee for me. "What about the other one?" I asked Carlos. "About the other one, the Tommy McEwen, he went to Eileen's on the Strip. He stayed there until 4:30 in the morning. A lot of people saw him. He lost much money." Eileen's was an after-hours drinking place and gambling joint up in Hollywood. If Tommy had been there until 4:30, that let him out too. "That's bad too, Chico?" Rosa asked. I nodded. "I'm sorry," Carlos said. "I am very sorry, but facts are facts." Those are our two main suspects at this point. So obviously this is a blow to Phil.
Yeah. This is the moment where it's like, okay, better find something else.
Yeah.
Maybe he should get on a plane somewhere. Maybe he should go to Argentina. Mm. Why hasn't he?
Yeah. You know, he's better strategy. You've got a lot of money. The police in this time are slow.
Right.
Maybe you just leave the country.
Exactly.
Right. Maybe you just leave the country at this point.
You're probably never going to be found. Now, if you have enough money, if you leave the country, people just pretend they can't get you.
Yeah. "I'm not blaming you," I told him. "Thanks anyway." "It is nothing," he said. "I am only sorry I could not bring you good news. But don't despair, amigo. Be optimistic." "Yeah," I said sourly. "Like me, for instance," Carlos said. "Look at me. I have been an optimist for 52 years. I let out a long sigh. "And don't worry," Carlos said. "We lose and we lose. All my life we have lost battles. But in the end, we will win the war. In the end, in the last battle, the victory will be ours. Of that, I am sure. And now, I must go back to my restaurant." This is good advice for Phil.
It is.
Phil.
He is at the basics.
Yeah, absolutely. So Phil does need this like Bed Bath & Beyond poster advice that Carlos is giving him.
Yeah, someone does really need to give him a live, laugh, love poster. I feel like it actually would get through to him.
This is the...
if he stared at it long enough.
You know what? That's the only way he's going to learn anything is with furniture. Be right back. We're back. Carlos just gave Phil some bad news, and now he's singing for some reason. He picked up his hat and began to sing a little song. He started it while he was shaking hands with us in the kitchen, and he was still singing it when the front door slammed behind him. And that is that, Rosa said after he left. I nodded and went into the bedroom to dress. After a moment, Rosa came in and dropped my wallet on the bed. You left this here yesterday, she said. I almost jumped for it. I'd been so pooped for so long that I hadn't even thought of the wallet once since I'd reached Rosa's house. Pooped, pooped, pooped I was. I was super pooped. But now I opened it quickly and heaved a sigh of relief. The bills were still there. I took them out and counted them. Then I gave the money to her and asked her to keep it for me. I'll hide it, was all she said. I finished dressing, not bothering to shave. My clothes were a mess, stained and wrinkled. I thought, there's no law that says you have to be well-dressed to be a fugitive. Phil, fugitives are classically sloppily dressed. If you're well-dressed, you don't look like a fugitive. You look like a fugitive if your shirt is torn and you're disheveled and your hair is messed up. You're like, oh, that guy might be running from the law.
Yeah, usually you could tell when someone looks like they're escaping something.
Right.
You know, like someone looks like they're in mid-bolt, you know, like that's clear.
Phil should be putting all his time and energy into looking as good as possible so that people don't suspect he's a fugitive. And here he's like, oh, my clothes are a mess. They're stained. They're wrinkled. You don't have to be well-dressed to be a fugitive. No, Phil, you got this so wrong. Passing the telephone in the living room on my way out, I remembered that I had promised to call Shelly. I dialed the house number and asked for her. The operator said she was out. I was sore. She had promised to wait in for my call. I didn't know whether I'd be able to call her again from where I was going, so I asked Rosa to call after a while. She repeated the name several times in a whisper to herself. That was the way she remembered names and other odd bits of information. You'll like this one, Rosa, I said. She looked at me sharply. Sure, baby, sure I'll like her. Yeah, baby.
The patience is wearing thin.
I want to see her, I said, and tried to figure out a safe place. I know. The Bowl. The Hollywood Bowl. Up on top. Tell her I'll wait there till 2 o'clock. The Bowl in the afternoon? Sure, I said. Nobody'll ever think of looking for me there. Inside, I thought, no, I'm really learning this business. I'm getting out of the novice stage. I'm getting to be almost clever at it.
Wow.
I'm going to tell you something. Phil is not good at this.
He's not getting better.
Rosa nodded. See you tonight, I said. For dinner? Maybe. Try to make it, baby. And take care of yourself. Take good care of yourself. She came over to me and kissed me on the cheek. Come back soon, she said. You know where the key is. Okay, Rosa. So we are not finished with chapter 10. There's a lot more to go. And this chapter gets way crazier.
This is an odyssey of a chapter.
But we're gonna pause there for today. So, Amanda, what do you think of the first half of chapter 10?
I'm not convinced that anyone in any of those scenes knows how willing Phil is to undercut even the best of help and the best of plans.
Absolutely. Like, he is a self-sabotager. And yeah, all these people are putting themselves on the line for him. You know, Rosa and Carlos, two of the only people who care about him, have like put themselves on the line for him.
And it's not enough.
It's not enough for Phil. He still wants snappy answers to stupid questions. This is not a great Phil chapter.
It is one of those, like, real Phil chapters where it's like, yeah. Oh, yeah, here's Phil really just being Phil right now, mm-hmm. while a lot of people are trying to reason with him.
But, man, Carlos, though.
Carlos. Carlos is the star of this chapter. He is vivacious. Mm-hmm. He's charming. He walks you through every single step of his plans. he does extra research for you. He's just a nice dude, and he's clearly like some kind of cool literary socialist.
I love
Carlos. I like you said, if this was a book about Carlos, we'd be having a great time.
Yeah, I think we wouldn't be reading it on this podcast, but
it would be too good.
It would be too good, but I'd be enjoying myself. Well, Amanda, if you thought a lot happened in this chapter so far, wait till you hear what happens in the other half of this chapter. Without spoiling anything, Phil is going to self-sabotage so hard, it's insane.
This rampage of, like, desperate, like, self-sabotage continues.
Yeah, that's coming up next time. Chapter 10, Part 2, Underachieve. Dirt Cheap is a Neon Hum podcast. It's hosted by me, Jeffrey Golden.
And me, Amanda Meadows.
Our producer is Carla Green. Associate producer is Chloe Chobel. The executive producer is Jonathan Hirsch. Editing by Vikram Patel. Original music by Chris Katinas. Additional tracks you hear on this episode are from Epidemic Sound. Our engineer and sound effects guy is Scott Somerville.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Twitter at Dirt Cheap Pod. And Instagram at Dirt Cheap Books. Also, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
See you next episode for another exciting chapter of Murder in the Glass Room.